The following Dharma discourse was given by Jeffrey Shugen Arnold at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugen Roshi is the head of the Mountains and Rivers Order and abbot of the monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmn.org. Thank you for listening.
This is from Master Wu Min's Gateless Gate, Case 48. Qianfeng's One Way, the main case. A student once asked Master Qianfeng, "The Buddhas of the Ten Directions have one way to nirvana. I wonder where this one way is." Qianfeng held up the stick, drew a line, and said, "Here it is." Later, the student asked Yunmen for his instruction on this question. Yunmen held up his fan and said, "This fan has jumped up to the 33rd heaven and hit the nose of the deity there. The carp of the eastern sea leaps and it rains, cats and dogs." The commentary. The one goes to the bottom of the deep sea and raises a cloud of sand and dust. The other stands on the top of a towering mountain and raises foaming waves to touch the sky. The one holds, the other lets go, and each, using only one hand, sustain the teachings. What they do is exactly like two children who come running from opposite directions and crash into each other. In the world, there's hardly anyone who is truly awakened. From the absolute point of view, these two great masters do not really know where the way is. The verse. Before taking a step, you have already arrived. Before moving your tongue, you have finished teaching. Even if each step you may be ahead of him, no, there is still another way up. So here we are in our last afternoon, last hours of this session and this ongo, and by this time tomorrow we'll be finishing things up. And this will be my last opportunity to have some words. Tomorrow it'll be somebody else's time to challenge you dragons and elephants. I thought it'd be nice to end with this case because it's the last case in the Gateless Gate. It's also the last point that Dogen brings up in his fascicle in Ten Directions. He does include the second part of this with Yunmen's teaching. But through all the teachings of Dogen, Master Dogen of the faith mind, this koan here, all throughout, particularly in the Mahayana, this question of how do we harmonize inner and outer, beginning to recognize, and understand the implications of what we call dualities, which can sound very dry and sort of removed, clinical. It's referring to everything that we experience and how we begin very early, based on the instruments of this human body and our consciousness, to, in seeing one thing, set up its opposite. Having set up its opposite, they come into conflict eventually. And then at the center of all of that is the self. And so we have this profound wisdom tradition that, as far as I can tell, we can spend the whole of our lives studying and never reach the bottom of it. The Buddha said this Dharma is good in the beginning, good in the middle, and good in the end. And I hear that to mean that it is satisfying at every step along the way, that it appeases our hunger all throughout, that we will never reach its end, which means that it's always, always more to be revealed. Wendell Berry said that recognizing that human beings are constantly capable of learning And in learning something, we've discovered something we didn't know before. And because that's an endless path, what that means is that we're always functioning within a certain degree of ignorance and blindness of that which we have not yet come to see. And then he asks the question, how should we go forth knowing this? And his response is with humility. Knowing that we do not know, and not knowing what we do not know. But with the faith and the conviction, really, because we see it over and over happening again, that there is more to be revealed. And that's where this mind of the way, that hunger that is transformed from a samsaric hunger, the hunger of a hungry ghost, is transformed into the appetite of a seeker, of someone who more and more we can delight in our hunger rather than be distressed by it. And driven by that hunger, which is so personal and so intimate, the Buddha said, there is no one dearer to yourself than you. No one who knows as acutely your mind, your sensations, your experiences, your suffering. And so that doesn't become self-serving, ultimately, self-centered. That we establish at the very beginning that this path and this liberation that we're seeking has to be for everyone. Must be. Not just because that's the right thing, the generous thing, the moral thing, but because it's the reality thing. It's the reality of the matter. That when we see more and more, there actually is no individual liberation. It's not just a matter of choice. Although we could make that choice, and we would make that choice within our ignorance, that choice is not actually in accord with the way things are. And so we cultivate this body of samadhi. And we cultivate it so that it's not just something that is happening on the cushion, but more and more it becomes the body of samadhi, not just the meditation or the experience of meditation, but more and more it's a way of being. And then we bring forth our realization into this mind of wisdom that flows continuously from our sincere heart in the 10 directions, as Dogen says. And to live this is the path of the bodhisattva. And so this student is coming to Master Qianfeng, about whom very little is known, lived in the 9th century, was a disciple of Dongshan. So he had this really excellent teacher, had no disciples that is known. Yunmen studied with him, but I could find very little about that, other than there's an encounter and there's another encounter with them. So this was a fairly high-powered circle of practitioners. So the student comes to Qianfeng, a student of Qianfeng's, I would guess, and says the Bhagavats, the Buddhas of the 10 directions, have one way to nirvana. I wonder where this one way is. Dogen brings this exact question at the end of his fascicle. Where is this one path to nirvana? Nirvana in the early tradition is, the etymology of the word is cessation, like blowing out a candle, the cessation of the kleshas, of the afflictions of our attachments, extinguished, liberated from the grasping, the false views. In the Mahayana, nirvana came to be understood as equal to samsara, in other words, as not apart from. The quintessence, we might say, of a unified reality, of a unified realization there is nothing apart from it. All of those things that we would run from, want to avoid, want to subdue, those very things themselves have the same nature as Buddha, as ourselves, as liberation. And so the Buddhas of the Ten Directions have one way to this liberation. Where is that one way? And Qianfeng held up a stick and drew a line and said, here. If there's one way, then why are there so many practices, so many different teachings and traditions? Why do the koans point to it in so many different ways? An oak tree, a shit stick, a cake, a rice cake, a bridge, an ox. Why does Dogen in this fascicle say it's a single fist, it's a single eye, it's everyday words? All things arise from this one uncreated reality, essence, truth. And in the multitude of our world, where that one essential nature, because of karma-causing conditions, arises in all the forms that we see, that in all of those forms, there's no opposition, there's no duality. Inherently, there's no love and hate, there's no conflict. There is living and dying as we see it. There's high and low. But within those characteristics that we recognize, there is no high and low. There is no superior, inferior. And so the faith mind says, as long as we remain in one extreme or the other, we'll never know that unity. Obviously. And so Qianfeng drew a line and said, here. It's here. And Dogen says, those words, it's here, means the ten directions, all time and space, no boundary. He said, the world-honored one is the staff. He might have said, you too are the staff. The staff is itself, it's here. This one path is no other than the ten directions. That's why it's liberating. And that's why we might say that whenever we touch, come close to, experience the path, we get a taste of the ten directions. A mind that begins to move towards stillness. A body that becomes more at ease. A response that is less reactive. A mind that is less languaging everything, adorning everything. That in all of those moments, there's an experience that we have. And in that stillness or that release or that relief or that calm or that spaciousness, are we not touching an aspect of that ten directions where there is no boundary, there's no conflict? Right, if that weren't so, then there wouldn't be that ongoing affirmation that is not unique to any one of us. It's universal. It's not uniquely Buddhist. And so practitioners of other traditions speak of that in their own way. And so morning, noon, and night, in each moment, every practice, each awareness, what Dogen is saying is there is just one path. The student, in their very question, is saying there is one way. Qianfeng says it's here. Dogen says it's here. The teachings always say, it's here. I mean, think about it. Have you ever let go of something yesterday? Have you ever let go of something now, yesterday? Have you ever let go of something tomorrow? Have you ever seen something before or after this moment? Never. It's here. So then why do we emphasize, if there's so many different practices, so many different doors into this one way, why do we emphasize Zazen so much? Dogen's established clearly that all of these practices have the same nature. All of them are 10 directions. All of them are unbounded. All of them are liberating. All of them are fundamentally without conflict. So why do we emphasize Zazen? I think it's because although all of them have the same nature, they don't all have the same upaya. They don't have the same effect on us because we're put together in a particular way. This body, its physical form, this mind, our consciousness, our language, the whole thing. This whole exquisite package, right? That our ancient wise elders discovered that this particular form of meditation, among many, many forms of meditation, remember the Buddha was taught several different forms of meditation prior to his own enlightenment, which I'm sure he incorporated what he learned, but he, in teaching meditation, in our practice of meditation, in all Buddhist forms of meditation, there are certain aspects that make it specifically or particularly Buddhist, which is really just another way of saying make it perfectly aligned, not just with reality, but what we as human beings need to practice in order to directly experience that reality. And that Zazen is a kind of perfect expression, a perfect path to that. I believe that to be true. Just my opinion. It's just another way of saying that it, what we seek, is never apart. It's never anywhere else. And isn't that hard to trust? And so it's here, Qian Feng says. Dogen says, it's here means the 10 directions. There is no other path. There is no other place. And so how do we concentrate our attention here? Because Dogen is saying, it's here is the 10 directions, which means it's boundless. It isn't bound to any form. You can't locate it in any place. It's not a thing. And so how do we turn our attention? What do we do with our mind? Recognizing we must do something. We can't just wish for it or wait for it. And so the teachings say here, it's here, takes the form of what appears before you. It's that simple. What appears before you? For the moment, let that be, it's here. It's this that we direct our attention to. And so, in one moment, it's the breath. And then it's a sensation. And then it's a thought. And then it's an emotion. And now it's walking. And now it's lying down. It's here. So again, we see that in all of this, we're not just cultivating mindfulness for the sake of mindfulness, as though that is something apart from or alone sufficient. That is an essential aspect, but it's an aspect that we bring that attention, our mindfulness, to here, because that is the entry into nirvana. That is the one true place, the one true thing. Tenkei Denson said, students think discrimination, the discriminating mind, is a bad thing. And so they try to avoid it by all means. Suppressing, right? Or we pursue it, right? Because it's enchanting. And Tenkei Denson says, but where is the discrimination? Can you locate it? What is it? Can you touch it? Retreat into yourself and see for yourself. Asking about it, discussing it, won't work. Focus your mind and look. Remember, every person is a unique and noble Buddha. And so what does direct your attention mean? Focus your mind, right? It's just a circular question. It keeps bringing us around to language, some words that are directing us to do something. And so the Buddha said, well, don't try and deny or suppress or stop anything. And he also said, and also at the same time, don't pursue and seek out and grasp anything. If we don't engage, again, those two familiar forms of activity, the middle way is revealed. You don't create it. But that's difficult, isn't it? It's because there's fear and there's anxiety. You know, our restlessness both arises from fear and kind of affirms that fear. And so our restless, fearful self wants security, naturally. We want security. We want some kind of stability. And we seek that in something permanent, something we can hold on to, something we can grasp, which is why samsara will never bring us peace. Because there is no such thing. And so to enter the one way, just cease to cherish opinions, a fixed idea. Abide in non-abiding. Flow freely within the non-grasping mind. Do not remain in fixed experiences and ideas of duality. Avoid such pursuits carefully. All of these are pointing to it's here. Not to produce it, but to stop creating in our mind what obscures it. This is why when a student asked Master Zhaozhou, what is meditation? Zhaozhou said, it's not meditation. And the student says, well, then what is it, for crying out loud? And Zhaozhou said, it's alive. It's alive. It may take us a long time to actually understand how alive not only Zazen, but everything is. It's here means the 10 directions. The 10 directions is the staff, is the line, is it's here. This one path is no other than the 10 directions. Nothing apart from it. When Zhaozhou said to that student, the koan I spoke of the other day, stupid oaf, Zhaozhou was drawing that line, was raising that staff, was saying, it's here. It's not before you. It is you. But Dogen goes on to say, however, do not hide the staff inside Gautama's nostrils. Do not stick the staff in the staff's nostrils. What is he saying? Do not hide the staff inside Gautama's nostrils. Do not hide this staff that is the 10 directions, this fist, this sincere heart. Do not try and hide it. He's warning us. He's encouraging us. There's an interesting dialogue between Qianfeng and Yunmen that echoes or perhaps sort of predates this conversation, this dialogue. Qianfeng once entered the hall. This is when Yunmen was studying with him, and said, the Dharmakaya has three types of illnesses and two types of light. You must enter them one by one so that you can return home and sit like a mountain. You must know that there is a yet more pivotal realization. And Yunmen stepped forward and says, why does one who is in the hut not know of the affairs outside the hut? And Qianfeng laughed loudly. And Yunmen said, this is still a place of doubt for this student. Qianfeng says, where's your mind moving? And Yunmen said, I want you to speak directly. And then Qianfeng generously says, then you must do as I said before, so you can sit like a mountain. And Yunmen said, okay. Why does the one who is in the hut not know of affairs outside the hut? Why does Dogen say, don't hide this staff in the Ten Directions, this staff that is boundless, this staff that when you enter into it, you yourself are boundless in the Ten Directions. You yourself are the whole body of the staff, are the whole body of a student, are this mountain. Why does he say, don't hide it within the Buddha's nostrils? There's so many teachings, in a sense, for almost every teaching that points to the way in, there's a companion teaching that points to how in that very path we will get lost. We will misconstrue. We will misunderstand. We'll misperceive. And to some degree, mispractice. What is holding on? What is letting go? What is calming the mind? What is awakening? What is emptiness? What is delusion? And so Qian Feng says, we must enter through all of these illusions, one by one. And of course, that's going to be true that we're going to misperceive because we come in misperceiving. So like, why should we think that that's just going to stop because now we're practicing the Dharma? But when we come in, we have not been absolutely misperceiving. Just enough to keep samsara going, but not so much that we didn't find our way here. And so both of those are functioning, both of those are alive, and don't you know it, right? Isn't that the place where we find ourselves all the time, between those two iron mountains? Moving forward, moving backward, letting go, reaching back and holding on, seeking peace, and then as we approach it, becoming anxious and retreating. He says you must enter through them one by one. You know, it's not quite like that. That suggests a kind of linearity, you know, like you've got this inventory of delusions you got to deal with, you know, assemble your own list at your pleasure. Have lots of paper. No need to erase. Just keep going. And so it's as though we have to go one by one. Oh my God, how many were there? It's not like that. Why is it not like that? Because it's all one thing. It's like when you're watering the trees. Every afternoon I see Seiko out front lovingly watering the front garden, right? And he waters the roots, right? And watering the roots, the whole tree is watered, right? This one way, it's right here. So then the student goes to Yunmen and says, ask the same question. Perhaps this is at a time where Yunmen was studying. So it was still very alive. And Yunmen said, this fan has jumped up to the 33rd heaven and hit the nose of the deity there. The carp of the eastern sea leaps and it rains, cats and dogs. This is, you know, I just thought, what would it have been like to study with Yunmen? He never gives you an ordinary answer. I mean, I think you either love it. It's sort of like, it was like Gikon was saying about, who needs Dogen, right? It's like he would have been something to reckon with, Yunmen. But he would have kept you lively, right? It would have never been dull. The 33rd heaven is in Buddhist cosmology. You know, Buddhism has some very serious hell realms. I mean, if you want to get serious about hell, Buddhism, I think, is your is your game, because it is fierce and varied. You know, depending on the life you've lived, oof. And it just gets worse and worse, you know. I mean, just reading about it is like hard to do. But on the other hand, there are quite a number of nice heavens. And the 33rd heaven is one of them, 33, because it's not the 33rd heaven, it's referring to the deities that live there. And it's the highest heaven that is still connected to the human world. So it's still got a connection. They're still listening from there. Vasubandhu said that in the 33rd heaven, the beings who live there are 1,500 feet tall. And they live for 1,000 years. And for them, 1 year is 100 years for us. So that works out to 36 million. I'm not quite sure about the math there, but that's what it said. But it's a long time. And so here the fan leaps up and hits the nose of one of the deities there. And then at that very same moment, the carp of the eastern sea leaps and it rains cats and dogs. What is he saying? It's crazy talk. There is a turning into the hut. Every Buddhist practitioner, I think, on some level is seeking that and wanting that, a kind of refuge from the storm, for a moment at least, a time to stop, to gather, to find some stability, to begin to turn towards. It sounds so simple, it's revolutionary to turn towards. But then there are affairs going on outside the hut, right? There's stuff going on out there. And it concerns us. It involves us intimately. And so there is a turning in, entering the hut, letting go of everything that calls to you, which is a very austere practice. We might even call it an ascetic practice, to actually let go of everything that is calling to you. Those things that are so dear. And for the moment, to turn your attention to, it's here, inside that hut, inside this whole body. Remember, it is the 10 directions. Nothing is forsaken. But for the moment, we turn our attention to this. And that allows us to experience things falling away. They haven't gone anywhere. But for the moment, it clears a space, creates a possibility in our mind to see something, to see ourselves, to see everything ultimately. And then there's a turning out, leaving the hut, going into those affairs of the world where it's noisy and raucous, and boy, there are a lot of people out here. And they're up to all kinds of stuff. This fan leaps up to the 33rd heaven. It's raining cats and dogs. How else could he say it? Yosho was speaking about how the teachings, it's a style. There's a style of teaching in Zen that speaks by allusion. Right? So Yunmen could have said, he could have kept half of it and said, the fan leaps up and hits the nose of the deity, and the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas of the world hear all of the cries with their 1,000 hands and arms and reach for that pillow in the night. He said the same thing in a different way. The carp of the eastern sea leaps and it rains cats and dogs. The affairs of the world are the 10 directions. They are the matter of compassion. What else would we be doing outside the hut as bodhisattvas? Even in our playing and dancing, even in our relaxing and resting, we have not forgotten. Do not forget that every time you hold your bowl up, Thus this food. We eat this food for everyone, to stop all evil, to save all sentient beings. That during the, when we were not having servers outside of the Zendo, we didn't make a food offering on the end of our spatula. We made it in our mind. That's the food offering. That's what we should be doing every time we put that morsel on the end of the... It's not in the morsel, although that does go out and is offered to the little creatures outside, but it's the mind that is giving before we feed ourselves. It's remembering those who are hungry, those who do not have this delicious meal, those who haven't benefited from the 72 labors. We remember. So many times when I wake up and I walk out of the Abbacy on my commute over, or I look out the back at the mountain, Mount Pleasant, Mount Romer, and I think, oh, I wish everyone could see this. When I read and hear and put myself in the place of people who are suffering in every possible way, it seems, I practice putting myself there. How would I practice that? How would I be? How strong would my vows be in such a moment? Would I only think of myself? Would I gather everything in? Would I go inside the hut? It's just something in my mind, but I do that to remember the one, how blessed my life is, and also two, how blessed, how not blessed other people's lives are at times. And to check any presumption or unfounded confidence that I am utterly free. It's understandable why we might not want to leave the hut. It's understandable why it's so challenging to face the suffering. We all know that. The mystery, which is actually not a mystery at all, it's just our nature, is that we are so much larger than that, as is everyone. Uniman is trying to free us from everything that holds us back, has caused us to hesitate, to restrain that natural inclination to leap forward. I remember years ago reading about the, remember when I think it was Dow Chemical, this many years ago, there was that terrible chemical plant meltdown, and I think it was Bhopal, India, that just devastated the area and killed many people and caused all kinds of destruction. And that the CEO immediately came out and took responsibility and said, we will take care of this. Filled with remorse and regret and horror. We will make this. We will do all that we can. And the article was saying, almost certainly he said those words before he had checked with anyone. Because within a day or two, he came back and he said, well, we're going to have to look into this. We're going to have to see what the cause was. We're not sure. Stepping it back, stepping it back, stepping it back. Not us, not me. But that first impulse was the true one. So if I may indulge, I want to bring out another of the poems that I wrote on faith. Talk about mystery. What is it? What is it, this faith? We cannot live without it. We certainly cannot practice without it. We cannot know ourselves and each other without it. There is no compassion free of faith. And yet, no one's ever seen it. You cannot put your hands on it. And there are those who doubt it. And so this is the nature of our practice. Have faith that the sun does rise, spring has come, arguments are being resolved, fields planted, transgressions owned, mistakes mended and wars ended, bodies leaning towards morning rays, and things done to avert calamity are confusion's proud achievements. That faith that all of that is within us, that's who we are. That's our natural impulse. When the conditions are sufficient, all too often the conditions are such to bring forth our greed and our stinginess and our impatience and our fear and our anxiety. And then that's built upon and built upon. It's easy to do that. It's so easy to do that. That's why tyrants and dictators and demagogues just have to be dictator enough. I mean, haven't we seen that? We've seen that they can be so transparently, baldly, nakedly ignorant, deceptive, hiding nothing. And it's so easy to feed that mouth of suffering. When it wants to be fed, when it wants to be affirmed, it wants to continue. It seeks its comfort, its protection, its sense of self, its world maintaining in that. That's the pickle of it, isn't it? That if our nature is so clear and bright, why does it hide so damn much? Right? I mean, come on. It's easy to understand why people doubt and sometimes we ourselves doubt. Are we actually okay? Are we good? But in Buddhism, it's not an opinion. It's not an opinion. It's just look and see. And you'll see. You'll know. And so while all of that happens within faith, even while tyrannies rage and raging burns, while the bodhisattva comes out of the hut to quench those fires, to hear those cries, at the ultimate level, the bodhisattva says, so let them burn. Let the raging burn, but truly. Let them burn from within inside the hut, exhaustively, utterly, until every strand of every tattered edge is worn smooth. In time, if not today. But why not today? Why not today? For isn't today our only time? You know, the best way, I think, to be a bodhisattva in the world and to bring forth wisdom and compassion is to just be a bodhisattva in the world. Pretty much. And it was just to live our vows, to actually live our practice, and to let that be large and then larger. And with every enlargening, there's an affirmation. That's your true body. That's your whole body. That's the body of every being. And so let's sail this right into our conclusion tomorrow. And so we can well launch this chief disciple sitting over here.
Thanks so much for listening. To find out more about our ongoing programs and residency opportunities, visit zmm.org.